This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's radio.
Free
radio.
You're listening to Feminist Current, making waves in the mainstream.
Let me clear space for you to sit beside me. You don't need your back against the wall.
You are listening to Feminist Current. I'm Megan Murphy. On May 11th and 12th, the World Summit End Sexual Exploitation 2025 was held at the Carter Center in Atlanta, Georgia. The conference formed working groups of experts and advocates in law enforcement and business, as well as frontline workers and survivors of exploitation, to discuss ways forward in the fight against trafficking and sexual exploitation. Kathleen Berry, the author of Female Sexual Slavery and longtime advocate for women's rights, gave the plenary speech at the conference. I spoke with her on Monday, May 18th, over the phone, about her experiences and the outcomes. Here's that interview.
Maybe you can start by just telling me a bit about the background that led to this World Summit and the recommendations.
Okay, that's a good place to start. There's two different backgrounds. There's the one that the feminist movement has been developing and evolving over the last 40 years, around prostitution, trafficking, and pornography as forms of sexual exploitation. And in that work, I was involved in working with UNESCO back in 1991 when the director of human rights there asked me if international human rights law was sufficient to address these problems. And I said, no. And she said, why? And I said, because it doesn't address the men buying the women. And she then funded a meeting that I held with her, and we developed this new convention. The pushback against that, the reaction to it, was pretty strong and vociferous. The feminist anti-pornography movement was very much involved in going after the ordinance that Dworkin and McKinnon developed. And so it kind of sat there for a while. The other origin of this is with President Carter. He has been a global human rights leader for many years, for many decades, and I think an extremely effective one. And he doesn't shy away from the difficult issues, such as having taken on the issue of Palestine being a condition of apartheid for Palestinians in Israel. He recently wrote a book on, which is a call to action, and it's on women, religion, and power. And in that book, he identifies various aspects of the condition of women globally, that in his view, and something that I think we all would agree with, makes the condition of women in this world today the most urgent problem on the planet. And that was his conclusion. In looking at prostitution and pornography, he was appalled at what he saw. He saw the Nordic model, the laws that would criminalize the customers for buying women, as a very powerful approach to addressing this problem. And then Robin Morgan came in and did an interview with him when his book came out, because she has a radio program through the Women's Media Center. So that was the avenue for the book. At that point, Amnesty International was beginning its campaign to promote prostitution. Some call it decriminalization. In effect, it's promoting prostitution, so that's how I refer to it. And she brought this up to President Carter. He was appalled. He wrote a letter to Amnesty, which went public and viral. And he also said he was calling a meeting in the coming year. With President Carter learning about you know, human rights NGOs actually turning to promoting prostitution, the focus of his meeting shifted from a meeting that was going to be about an anti-trafficking meeting to a meeting about sexual exploitation. And that shift took place when I was able to present to him through his director of human rights, Karen Ryan, the Convention Against Sexual Exploitation that we developed back in 1991. And he, with Karen, both decided that was the focus that they wanted for this meeting. Thus, the title of it, and Global Summit Ending Sexual Exploitation 2025.
Can you tell me how you came to the recommendations? You know, where did those recommendations come from? Were those sort of formal meetings? Or
that was the real excitement of the workshop. We had, I gave an opening presentation. We had panel presentations and different aspects of the issues. I had recommended a number of radical feminists working on these issues, many of whom were invited, some of whom will hopefully make it to the next meetings, be invited to the next meetings. And this is, you know, these are the people doing the best work, the strongest work on these issues right now, and as including the survivors such as Rachel Moran, Bridget Perrier, and others who were there. And so the panels were held, the information was put forth. President Carter, prior to this summit, had made a public service announcement stating publicly that he endorsed the Nordic model and hoped to see it in all the states, and that he called upon the United Nations to take up the Convention Against Sexual Exploitation. So this was the first time we didn't have to fight to get it into the agenda. It was built into the program before we even arrived by his public service announcement. So then the workshops were meant to come up with 1, 5, and 10-year plans in the areas of legislation, business, law enforcement, and survivors programs. And that was really the meat of the conference, where we went, go into these workshops and then come back for panel discussions. But the workshops were really meant to be getting at these questions and had facilitators who were really trained to move things along, even when I didn't think anything was happening. Apparently things were happening, because I'd go out of one meeting and come back into the next one. And all of a sudden, we're at a kind of a different plateau, and we're putting specific recommendations forward. The tone of the recommendations then was set by the framework that President Carter and Karen Ryan set for the conference, and that was set in the opening panels and discussions by the feminists who have come and human rights advocates who come to deal with this issue.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you can talk about some of the more powerful moments that happened throughout the summit for you, for others, what you saw as really impactful in terms of your time there.
Well, clearly for me, the opening and the opening panel was the most powerful. I gave the opening plenary, and I'm not saying it was the most impactful, because I gave it. That's the last thing I would say. But what we were able to do is put together an opening panel with Rachel Moran, a survivor from Ireland, with Simon Hagerström, the detective in Sweden who's responsible for implementing the Nordic model there, in that it's his squad that goes out and arrests customers. And so he could tell law enforcement people how to do it. We had Agneta Strom from Norway talking about the problem of the trafficked women from Romania and other countries into Norway, and how they're not dealing with that, how they become kind of stateless. And what we managed to do in the whole opening of the meeting was to lay out the most fundamental groundwork principles of dealing with sexual exploitation. The survivors experience what happens to women when men buy them, what that does to them, how they're broken down by that, how they try to get out, and how we can get these creeps off the streets and out of, you know, women's lives, and in terms of what they're doing in Sweden and what you're now doing in Canada. That, to me, set the tone. And I think it was a tone that was picked up by everybody there. And this was by no means a feminist conference in terms of those who attended. But I think virtually everybody there picked up that tone, carried it into their workshops. And while they came in talking about trafficking, they, in the workshops, the one I was in, they immediately were talking about ending the demand, stopping the men from buying. That was everybody's primary concern. And so we were all on point. The other really powerful moment for me, incredibly powerful, was when I sat in the audience and listened to the reports and watched the people in giving the reports back from the workshops, and feeling like everything that I've worked for the last 40 years and more is coming to fruition, and that I've kind of done what I was supposed to be doing. I don't know what that means, but anyway, it had a powerful experience on me personally, because I could see this now is moving into a really global movement from this meeting and from the support of the Carter Center.
Mm-hmm. And what were some key recommendations that came from the summit?
Well, one of the key recommendations, you know, this was supposed to be a global meeting, but in the sense it was really an American meeting, and in that sense, a really a U.S. meeting, because lots of the people there were U.S.-based and focused on trafficking in the U.S. and in different places. So we learned more about how C-36 is working for you in Canada, and so we learned more about the law enforcement workshop, learned from Simon about how to actually enforce the law if you can get it through. And so one of the big recommendations coming out of this is a push for all of the states in the United States to develop the Nordic model, which would be phenomenal and was very, very strong. The other, for me, very important, and I think for the whole meeting, very important recommendation is the follow-up of the president's endorsement of the Convention Against Sexual Exploitation and recognition that we need international law. Recently, 100 countries in the world were surveyed on their laws on prostitution. 49 of the 100 have legalized prostitution, which is really state-sponsored pimping. And a state industrialization and commodification of women's bodies for men to buy. Without a convention against sexual exploitation through the United Nations, there's no real international law above these countries that says you are violating these human beings' rights, whether or not they want to be there, whether or not they've been forced, whether or not they're children, whether or not they've been trafficked. It is a fundamental violation of human rights to sexually exploit another human being. That will be an international law when this convention is adopted by the United Nations and then the various states make it a treaty. It becomes a treaty with each of the states. That will give countries like Germany, the Netherlands, Austria, the other 46 of the countries in the world that have done this horrendous legalization, it'll give feminists and those and human rights advocates in those countries something more to work on to say there's something that's above our law. That's why human rights was codified in the first place. Germany took on itself to say it was the law under Hitler. That was the law to eliminate Jews, to invoke this Holocaust. There was nothing above. That was why we called for, the world called for a Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's to say, no, you're not above the law. We have something above you that says that what you have done is horrendous and can never happen again. And we have to do that now with sexual exploitation.
One recommendation was to hold corporations that support and promote sexual exploitation responsible for their participation in exploitation. I wonder, can you talk a little more about that? What kinds of corporations support and promote sexual exploitation?
Well, this is pretty far-reaching, and it came from the business group. And we all wondered what people who were coming from business were going to come up with about stopping sexual exploitation. It's pretty far-reaching. I think it's going to take future meetings to see how this actually can be implemented. But basically, we see, I mean, in the media, for example, virtually every facet of the media is involved in sexual exploitation. Whether it's the back page that is actually promoting prostitution with its advertisements, or whether it is a promotion of a kind of pornography like sexuality and sexual behavior that encourages men to buy women, men to sexually exploit women. And of course, let's not forget the pornography empire in and of itself, which is a huge medium for sexual exploitation. It is that if you look at this idealistically, and I really believe and want to encourage every feminist to look at our issues idealistically, we have to reach for what we really want way out there in the future, even if we think it will never come. Because if we ask for anything short of that, we're never going to get what we need. And so looking at this idealistically, wouldn't it be a different world if eventually we got, or even sooner than eventually, we got institutions of the media to turn around and be held accountable for the sexual exploitation of women and girls, but the sexual exploitation of all human beings as far as that goes, be held accountable financially, because we know the business world is not accountable for anything other than finances. So it probably seems like a long shot, but I think it's one worth keeping on our agenda.
And another one of the recommendations was to eliminate the word prostitute and sex work, or any other language that legitimizes commercial sexual exploitation from any legislation. Why is that? In particular, how do those words legitimize commercial exploitation?
Good point. And I was really glad to see this. Let me start with the word prostitute to begin with, because it's quite different than the term sex worker.
Mm-hmm. And actually, prostitute's a word that I've used in my work before, so I was
curious
about that. So know why to stop using it.
what we want, and what was the consensus, and this was very strong from the survivors, is that no human being is a prostitute. No woman, no girl, no boy is a prostitute. They are people who have been prostituted. They're women who have been prostituted. But as a noun, we eliminate that from our vocabulary. And so we see the use of the term prostituted woman or prostituted child or woman in prostitution. These locate the exploitation of the human being, but they don't make the human being synonymous with the exploitation. Whereas, so if you say she is a prostitute, you say that she is sexual exploitation. And where you see, if you say she is a prostituted woman, you say she is a woman who has been prostituted, who has been sexually exploited. Very, very different concepts. And so, and it's something I think we need to make clear in those recommendations, that it's not totally the word prostitution, but it's the use of the word prostitute to refer to a human being who has been prostituted. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's quite different than our wholehearted denunciation of the term sex worker. Sex worker is supposed to be, has been offered to the public in our general thinking as the term to use that is the least offensive for women who choose to be in prostitution and choose to sell the use of their bodies for sexual, for sexual exploitation by men. That is a term invented by the sex industries to promote the sex industries and to normalize prostitution so as to enlarge the commodification of women. I think I said earlier, prostitution really doesn't have anything to do with women. What it is about is the men who buy. And so whether a man buys a woman who is forced or not forced, a child or an adult, he's buying what he wants. He doesn't really care about these other criteria. If he wants young, he buys young. If he wants Filipina, he buys Asian. You know, it's a commodity market. He buys what he wants. The term sex worker is used by the sex industries to promote prostitution and to normalize it in the population. It is claimed that the women who use the term sex worker are claimed to be in the forefront of a movement for sex workers' rights, that they will feel better with the use of the term sex worker. They feel better because they're part of a sex industry exploitation of a movement which we have launched. And it's kind of like taking any condition of oppression and trying to make people feel better by making the term that identifies that oppression feel good. So, you know, instead of saying this person was a slave, say this person was serving as a worker in conditions where he was able to, you know, bring about an abundance of resources that improved the quality of the plantation, for example. Now, that would make the slave feel a little better, they would think, to talk about it in those terms. It doesn't work, you see. It just doesn't work. We know what the meaning of slavery is. And what we don't know as a society is what the meaning of prostitution and sexual exploitation is. When we arrive at the point where the society knows that sexual exploitation is a violation of human rights, then we will no longer have to explain why a woman trying to claim that she will feel better if she's called a sex worker has no right to do that. And so, but we're not focused on the woman. We're actually focused on the sex industry that has brought this term out. A good example of this is Amnesty International. Amnesty International claims to be representing sex workers. And it claims it has sex workers at its various annual general meetings to do workshops and promote sex work as a right and as their choice. They come lock, stock, and barrel with the escort agencies and the pimps that they're working with. And so what we've seen is that Amnesty International has been heavily infiltrated by the sex industries, and they then have gone and heavily infiltrated the groups that have influence on the United Nations, UN AIDS, UN Women. But what it comes back down to are the sex industries, because this would not be such a vested interest of so many people calling it sex work if there wasn't money involved. The money is not what the women make. The money is what rolls the sex industry along.
And what's the significance and the impact of those recommendations and of the conference in terms of prostitution legislation, but also in terms of the feminist movement at large and the prostitution debate?
In some senses, Megan, I think I would like to leave some of this debate in the feminist movement in the dust. It is that as long as we don't have means to move these issues forward, we are sometimes left debating with people and arguing with people whose vested interest is the sex industry. And so what it does is take away from us. It takes away from us hope from us. It takes our energy away. It is harmful. It's been harmful to my health over the years. It can bring us to despair at times. What I would like to see is us really seeing not only this meeting, but there's other things that are going on in the world. Gail Dines has incredible programs coming out of her work on pornography. And these new programs are going to be part of this whole momentum from the Carter Center. But these things take off on their own. I'm hoping to work with various NGOs who have up to now been focused on trafficking, but are seeing that they need to expand their focus. And to what we've never wanted to do as a feminist movement is just be talking among ourselves. We talk among ourselves to build our strength, to clarify our thinking, to build our analysis in order to go out and make change in the world. I think that what we're going to see from the Carter Center is that there's going to be more meetings to come. There's going to be more actions to come. I'm going to be participating tomorrow morning in a roundtable discussion at the Carter Center that will probably be up on the Carter website either tomorrow or the next day, the Carter Center website. And all of these things will be part of moving this forward, as is our conversation right now. I'm so pleased that you wanted to do a podcast on this, because this is a way of getting the word out. And getting the word out, getting people talking about it. I foresee things like getting people in their local communities to start addressing issues of prostitution and pornography in these terms, in the terms of sexual exploitation, and the different framework and the different strength of analysis that will bring, and how that will then feed into new international human rights law.
Thank you. That's all for me. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we end the interview?
Well, I think I just would like to kind of conclude it by saying that when you look at the experience of those who have survived being bought by men to be sexually used and abused, we can't do anything less than the kind of things that we've been talking about here. And as long as we stay true to understanding what that experience actually is, not a little framework that we want to put it in to make it palpable to somebody that we think won't get it, but the framework that it, as it actually is, as you do so well, Megan, in your writing on a variety of feminist issues, you stay very, very clear on what the experiences, what the actions are that oppress women and that exploit us. And with that kind of clarity, I think we are most in sync with global human rights, which comes from a profound clarity that the kind of harm that we've been talking about today, the kind of harm that we saw in the Second World War, should never happen again, that no human being should be subjected to that, and that in fact, we are as human beings born with the inalienable right to be free of that sexual exploitation and the objectification that it begins with. So I guess that's where I would leave it.
Thank you so much for your time and your insights today.
Oh, thank you. I really love talking with you about these things. I think your work is amazing, and I think you are amazing.
Oh, thanks so much. I really appreciate that. You just heard an interview with Kathleen Berry, PhD. Kathleen holds 2 doctorates in sociology and education from the University of California, Berkeley, and taught at major universities for over 20 years. She is the author of 5 books, including Female Sexual Slavery, which launched a new global movement against trafficking in human beings, and is an internationally recognized feminist human rights activist. For more on her work, visit kathleenberry.net. That is all the time we have for today. I'm Megan Murphy. Thanks for tuning in to Feminist Current. Feminist Current is a syndicated show produced by Megan Murphy out of Vancouver, BC, Canada. For more information on the show, please visit www.feministcurrent.com. If your station would like to air Feminist Current, you can find episodes at audioport.org or email us at info@feministcurrent.com.